Welcome to Modcast 46. Today we're going to be joined with Rich Marinaccio, also known as Cephalo on the forums, and returning guest host, Matt Jin.
Hey, I'm back.
I'm really bad about remembering to let people say hello. So, Cephalo, you may let them know what your voice sounds like once again.
Hi, I'm Cephalo. So what are we going to be talking about today?
We are going to talk about you.
Okay.
And about just you.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm the guy who made the perfect world map scripts for Civ 4 and Civ 5. I've always been kind of interested in procedural creation, as they call it, I guess. A long time ago when I was learning to program, I created this this kind of an interesting galaxy program where you could use pseudo-random numbers to create like an infinite amount of stuff, basically. So I made this program that created a whole universe, and each with billions of planets, and each one with its own kind of topographical map. And I was just kind of fascinated by how you could just sort of define something that was so huge just with mathematics. And ever since then, I've been kind of interested in the process of creating things procedurally. When Civ 4 first came out, it was interesting how they kind of gave you access to how they make the math. And when I saw things like Tectonics map script, which was all I used for like the first year I played, I realized that that would be a good way to kind of, you know, dive deeper into that in a way that people could use and see. It's just something to do for fun, I guess.
It's very successful.
It's been very nice to see that a lot of people using it and people, you know, saying nice things about it. It's always nice to hear.
So looking through your Lua file here, one of the first questions that pops at me is, could you explain what Perlin noise is, since you say it's based on manipulations of that?
It's something that you can use to sort of simulate natural movement. You can use it for not just maps and things like that, but for just for anything.
It's heavily used in computer-generated graphics like fire and smoke and clouds. So you can see how like the fractal randomness and the noise pops out in that sort of situation. So I can see how you're trying to use it for the map and generating all the terrain and everything else. Because it's very similar, because you're instead of spray painting terrain type, you're actually just using the procedural texturing to get the same effect. But I mean, from what I've seen, it looks a lot better.
So you can create these layers of noise to get a particular effect that you want to get. Like, I use it both for generating shapes that kind of look like mountain ranges, and also just to give the terrain kind of a natural coastline. And basically, I'm trying to combine it all so that it looks interesting and natural. And Perlin noise is a very useful tool for that sort of thing. And you can use it any way you want. And you could do almost anything with it as far as, like, generating content, really.
In comparison to other map scripts, I played Tectonics as well, and indeed the mountain ranges look somehow very natural. Whereas in Tectonics, they're more, I don't know, they're placed logically, but, they're more sometimes like straight lines.
Yeah, that's something that I think... In Tectonics, I think he uses a what they call a Voronoi map, which is like you draw a bunch of points on the map, and then you separate it into regions depending on which one is closest to which point. So if you have two points next to each other, it creates kind of a grid. And that does kind of create a little bit straight lines. I did a similar thing in Perfect World 2. To create my mountain ranges there for Civ 4. And I wanted to do something a little different for Civ 5 that would look a little bit more natural.
Yeah, so when I think of complicated map scripts, usually the ones that come to my mind are the Perfect World and the Tectonics. And just for curiosity's sake, I just popped them both up. And including lines of comments, which there's not too many once you pass the start, Perfect World comes in at 6 times as long as Tectonics. Tectonics has got 503 lines, Perfect World's 3,001. So, yeah, a little bit of complication in there.
Yeah.
But
at the same time, it's actually a lot simpler than the Civ 4 versions because Sirion did a great job on all the resource placement and stuff like that. And combined kind of with the nature of Civ 5, I think in Civ 4 you really needed a lot better starting positions than you do in Civ 5. It's more, the game is designed to be kind of more forgiving that way, I think.
On that note, it really is. In one of the map generation files, the developers actually really talk about how the start locations have been balanced to a point. So if you get stuck in a difficult terrain, you'll get a lot more bonus type food with the map script. Or it'll be very careful about how it hands you luxury resources and what type of resources are near you. In Civ 5, it's a lot more forgiving than Civ 4 because they've purposely ensured that even if you get a really bad start, you'll be okay.
Yeah, and Sirion did a great job at creating a very general purpose resource placement system where I just didn't have to mess with any of that stuff. And in previous versions, I probably had to dedicate most of the code to just finding good starting locations and placing the resources properly. So,
can you really call it a general purpose though? I've tried to look into that resource and starting position generator, and I don't know. It's also a couple thousand lines, if I remember correctly, mm-hmm. and rather hard to get your head around the first time. Whereas you could just add a resource and code with all the rest.
It's kind of a little bit of the way they did it this time is a little bit of a problem for modders because I think you actually have to change the. I think the file is called Assign Starting Plots Lua.
Yeah.
And I think if you make a mod that has like different resources and things like that, I think you actually have to go in there and change that in order to get those placed. So, it's easy for me to look at it and figure how to do it, but if you're not like really familiar with scripting and map scripts and stuff like that, it's a lot more difficult.
Well, it is kind of nice that you have to do that, though, because I remember there was a couple times where we started getting into complicated, hey, let's invent a crazy resource that does this awesome thing for you, and then all of a sudden the Civ 4 default starting system would throw them in there for you automatically. And you'd be like, no one's supposed to start with that. And so forcing Civ 4 not to do that was a bit of a pain, so I think I'm kind of in favor of having to tell Civ 5 that it has permission to.
Right. I think you do have to make your own map scripts if you're going to make a mod that changes the resources. I'm not sure about that because I read this code in depth, but it was quite a long time ago now, so I'm a little bit fuzzy on that. I'm all in favor of people getting their hands dirty because once people start getting familiar with that and the community starts doing it, then you can find tutorials and
it does look like they made it slightly more complicated to introduce new terrain or changing the terrains and the resource types or adding something. I mean, they even directly comment you can't plug and play in the XML. So you can't just create a resource and toss it in the XML and hope it'll work. You actually have to get deeper into the system to make it work properly.
I was reading through a lot of different map scripts as well as the default files, and it was a little bit ago, so I might be mistaking things here, but I remember one of the things I'd ran across where they were talking about you can't just pop in the XML was saying things like how it's set up now to place certain luxury resources to where you have to go through a city state to get to them and things like that that make the Civ 5 mechanics become more integrated into your map. So in those cases, you could have a GUI that helps you to do all the extra bits, but you couldn't just pick it up out of the XML. Unless you added some extra tags in there that would flag it as, hey, this is a luxury resource which should probably be hidden behind a city state, or, hey, make this a monopoly resource, give it all to one player so that everyone hates him and attacks him, type of deals like that. But you could strip out all of that and just have everything completely random, and you just hope that things become interesting on their own. which takes some of the fun out of it, but makes it easy to plug and play.
Cephalo, you also use different continental graphical styles in your map scripts. Is that correct?
Yes, I do. I didn't want to. I caved into some pressure from some of the people posting on the forums because I wasn't quite satisfied with some of the continent styles. Like I don't really particularly like the one with the bright orange trees.
Oh yeah, America.
Yeah, I didn't really know what to do with that. There were also some issues with the way jungle looks on certain continental styles, because you'll have the dense jungle trees on top of like kind of a yellow plains, and what that looked like to me. So I grew up in western Nevada, where we have what are called manzanita bushes, which are these dry, very kind of like a desert shrub that has like a dark green evergreen color. And it didn't seem like it was jungle to me. So I forced all the jungle in the map to use the Europe continent style, because it has a much more green colored plains. I wanted to have everything so that the individual terrain style looked the best it could be. Like I wanted to take the desert style from, I think it was Africa, and use that for my deserts.
It's very dune-ish.
Yeah, everybody wanted to have like continents that looked different though. So I went ahead and did it that way, and I think I used the Africa desert, like on the largest desert in the world, and I still use the Europe continent style for the jungles so I can get rid of that dry appearance. Other than that, yeah, I do the same kind of continent selection thing that they do in the factory maps.
So in the Civ 4, you used pine trees to signify height differences.
Yeah, and I didn't have that opportunity in Civ 5. And I think the way Perfect World 3 looks suffers a little bit from that, because I went through a lot of trouble to simulate rain shadows. And when you don't have like the pine trees to kind of show you where those little altitude bumps are, it just sort of looks like grassland next to desert, next to grassland and desert, without really communicating the reason very well. So you kind of have to use your imagination a little bit and say, okay, well, that's that way for a reason. It's one of those things where you work so hard on a certain aspect of something and you're unwilling to give it up. I really do miss the pine trees.
It's kind of, yeah, the trees, except for the America trees, they kind of don't look, yeah, that much different between the continental styles. So
right, and I can't use them to indicate like a different climate, really. They're pretty much just green deciduous trees.
Yeah, I'm sure somewhere along the way somebody's going to take a look at some of those and start adding more options.
I know. I think still terrain and graphics still isn't open for modding, as far as I know, right? Except for units. Except for unit graphics.
Okay. I don't think so. And they also said that you can't change out terrain once the game's actually running. So that's also going to be a limitation that some people are going to be mildly upset with.
You mean terrain types?
Like you can't change a grassland to a desert and have a land shift.
So like they fall from heaven.
Yeah, there go all those nice spells. Oh, but you could simulate it with features. I don't know. You could do a desert feature on that has the same effect.
Well, I remember when Fall from Heaven used to allow you to like, cast spells to kind of change the land. I guess that's what you can't do anymore, is like change a grassland to desert.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and also for another mod that I've been working with, we were talking about using those continental styles to reflect changes in the game over time. So you switch between styles to let you know the time has passed, but you can't hop swap them. We'd have to actually have the whole game reload the map. So let's do a full save, reload, which that would definitely let you know something happened. You wasted 5 minutes of your life.
That could explain why it soaks up so much memory.
So one of the things in your thread you talked about, Cephalo, was having problems with multiplayer because of how the map random works. So does that mean everyone has to have your mod downloaded as well? You can't just have the host create the map and then the map gets shared out?
No, because the way they do it in Civ 5 and in Civ 4 is that everybody creates the map at the same time using the same seed value. And there's a system within the game. I mean, we haven't looked at the code for Civ 5 because it hasn't been released yet. But I remember in Civ 4 there's a system there to make sure that the random numbers given out are in sync with everybody else. So everybody was basically generating the map independently with the same seed value. And if I'm using the seed values that come from like Lua or Python, that breaks the sync in multiplayer. And there are ways around that, and I haven't fixed it yet. One of the forum posters on there had a solution that I think will work, and I need to update my map that should take care of that, actually.
Gone to, I don't know, first create a game on your own computer and then simply post it as narrow in a way? That way it's created single player, but I don't know, or at least on one computer, and then everyone plays it multiplayer? Because it's just, I mean, I assume it still works in a Hotseat and a PBM, your map scripts?
I would imagine, well, maybe not PBM.
Hotseat, I mean, yeah.
Hotseat should work,
but then you have to wonder, you know, did the host load over and over and over until he got one that he really liked? Did he look at the whole map before he actually shared it to us? So
right.
I mean, there's questions that random multiplayer groups might come up with.
Hmm. Hotseat, you usually only play it with guys you already know and trust. It's not something like the... Yeah.
In Hotseat, we all get to look at the computer at the same time.
You know, I think that
I know
the map should work in Hotseat. Does it not work in Hotseat? No, I've never tried it. So,
well, I'm currently in certain. Yeah, we just use a Hotseat to simulate PBM play by emails. So it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah, it definitely would work for Hotseat. Hotseat's basically it's just multiplayer, except we redefine who the human is on regular intervals.
One thing that might break it, I think when I packaged the mod, I think I may have indicated that was a single-player-only map. So that in itself may break that.
Like really? I think half the buttons in and the Civilization SDK simply don't do anything yet.
It's always possible. well, we're not supposed to be having mods for multiplayer yet, are we? Or did that slide in at some point?
Yeah, that's still not possible yet, so...
So I would assume map scripts wouldn't necessarily work on multiplayer for the exact same reason.
Oh, yeah.
I think you can make a multiplayer map, and in fact, I think I can make a Perfect World multiplayer. In fact, I think some people are doing that already by editing the script themselves. But you have to... I just have to fix it.
Cephalo, a while ago you mentioned Fall from Heaven. You also wrote a map script for that.
Yeah, I did the creation map script. I think what I was going for on that one was, you know how in fantasy worlds there's always like these regions that have like a certain atmosphere, and they're usually ringed by mountains. Like you have to go through this mountain pass to get to such and such land, and that sort of thing. I wanted to create that sort of feeling of having like different regions surrounded by mountains and. Lots of choke points on the map, and I also was trying to get away from the feeling of having like a planet, because like in these fantasy games, sometimes it's good to just think of the world as just sort of a flat thing that you don't really know the boundaries of,
What's this called? Terry Pratchett's, his series, A Flat World, you mean? You want to think of the map as a flat world?
Well, just because you don't know where the boundaries are. Like, if you figure, like, you're in kind of an ancient civilization where things that are just too far away are just too far away to worry about.
Yeah, sorry, you're just taking a look at a section of the world with the map, right, rather than like the whole thing.
And in your mind, it's still the whole world because you just don't know or care about what's going on outside of that sphere because it's just never going to impact your life, you know, back in ancient times. So I think it kind of has – it's a good fit for a fantasy universe to have kind of a this nebulous concept of the whole world. And that's kind of
– oh, yeah. Okay.
That's kind of what I was going for that map is to just make it more fantasy.
There was some, I don't know, the orcs always started in jungle, I think. So, some of the starting positions sometimes were unbalanced.
Right. I didn't care about, like, whenever I do anything with modding, I never care about balance. I always care about atmosphere. So if the fiction of a certain race was to start in the deserts, like I think there were, I was going to put them out in the desert, whether they were starved there or not.
Yeah, I think that was you did that on purpose to entice Kyle to make the Malakim more playable.
Right, because their fiction was to live out in the desert, but he never actually got around. I don't think he ever got around to actually making them, you know, thrive. They still needed to plant their fields and stuff like that, just like any other Civ. But, you know, the fiction said that they went in the desert, so that's where I put them.
Well, they have good use of the desert to cross and spell, I think. That's, the nature mana.
I don't remember.
Okay, yeah.
I think so. So, Cephalo, you create a perfect world for Civ 4 and then for Civ 5. Now, obviously, you had to switch from Python to Lua, so you had to rewrite everything. But how much of your code were you able to just carry over, and how much of it did you have to change fundamentally because of, like, one unit per tile and ranged combat and other things?
Everything that I did, if I wanted to, I could have ported over Perfect World exactly as it was. The only reason why I rewrote a lot of the code is because I had some ideas that I thought might improve some things. It was actually a very easy switch to go from Python to Lua. And Lua is much better. It's just way, way faster.
So basically you wrote it from scratch with Perfect Worlds 1 and 2 as lessons learned in the back of your head?
I did port over some algorithms. Like, you can't really port over the code because you do have to change, like, all the syntax. But
3,000 lines of it.
I had, like, my previous Python open while I was doing the Lua in a lot of cases, just so I could make sure, okay, I got this variable, I got this. Like, I wasn't even thinking in a way, well, I have to make this work. I was just in the copy mindset, where I'm just going to copy this and copy this in Lua. And so it was really a pretty easy change.
No, I wouldn't worry about lines of code. It's far less of a good measure than algorithmic complexity. Just because it takes you 3,000 lines to write something that may have taken 2,000 lines in a different language doesn't necessarily mean it was worse.
Yeah. Especially with the spaces layout that Firex uses, you know, a bracket on each line in C++.
God, that makes WinMerge so horrible, too. Can't stand that format style. It looks nice, but God, does not work for WinMerge.
It's readable for beginners like me.
It was very bad in Python, actually, because they used to mix spaces with tabs in their files.
Oh, yeah.
So if you copied and pasted something, it wouldn't compile, because in Python you have to have your indentations make sense, because it's all significant. So that was... Sometimes I would spend an hour like trying to clean up their stuff when I wanted to copy their code for whatever reason.
Can't you just replace four spaces with a dent? I don't know. I sometimes replace.
Oh, never use tabs. Oof. Because tabs on your system might be set to 3, and tabs on their system might be set to 4, and other such random fun stuff. So it really makes a mess of it. And some systems may just replace tabs with spaces.
Yes.
With one space. Ouch.
And
I always used tabs because then I simply had to press less buttons, you know.
It only works if everybody's that it will ever touch that file has the exact same setup as you, which means in a developer in development house, that's fine because you can actually ensure that the consistency is there. But in this sort of situation, where, you know, people are modding and, you know, have their own systems and no one's talking about specifications and everything else, then yeah, it can make a big mess. So that's why I tend to just use space. You just use spaces and dodge tabs.
I didn't know that. But, Steve Cephalo, I noticed you use tabs as well in your file.
Yeah, I use tabs. you know, in the only time it really matters that much is in Python. Like, if you have another language and you mess that up, it might look a little funny, but it'll still work.
Yeah.
So, Cephalo, one of the huge things that they had done with Civ 5 was they opened it up so that we can actually mod the in-game lobby and the opening screen, which I was so happy they did, but I haven't actually played with it yet. And I notice you still got a bunch of settings just at the start of your Lua file where you have to go into the Lua and do it. Have you looked at trying to modify the in-game lobby so that they're all there?
Wait a minute. You mean like... So I didn't even know that there was a capability of like making your own UI for a map script kind of thing.
Yeah, kinda as soon as they've gone, so you load up Civ 5 and then you go into mods and then you say what you want to enable. The moment they click to activate your mod, you can start rewriting their entire UI from that point.
You mean
you can change what the mod browser itself looks like? You can change what the game lobby looks like. You can change, you know, what they see. So you can make it to where if they enable your map script, then they no longer get the choice of what map script you want to use. They're just using yours because they enabled the bloody thing. And then they'll have, you know, 27,000 different drop-down menus they can choose from with tooltips that explain exactly what they're tweaking and all that so that you don't have to ever open the Lua, but they get all of that customization.
Wow.
Okay, sorry. Concretely, do you mean something like the not yet another Earth map pack? Are you familiar with that?
I haven't looked at that one.
Okay, then we can cover it another time.
See, before this, I could complain ignorance and then not have to worry about all that stuff.
The more you know, the more work you have to do.
See, the reason why, in Civ 4, you were able to have like a whole bunch of different options that you could put in a map script, and people always wanted me to take all those variables that I have in there for editing and put them all in the options, but I resisted that because I felt it was easier to just set things how you like it, and it's saved in the map script, and I just felt that was better than making people like go through screen after screen after screen every time they wanted to play.
Bet you can just put it in all in one screen, I think.
Well, maybe in Civ 5 you can, I guess.
Yeah, in Civ 5 you can. In Civ 4 it would have looked horrible.
Oh no, it was also
you can go through and make it look exactly how you want it to.
I think the Full of Resources map script it was written by Stowe. You guys remember Stowe from
Civ?
He made this really awesome UI for his map script, and I don't know how he did it. He had to do some kind of weird stuff to make that happen. But I felt it was just easier just to tell people to just get their hands dirty and get in there and change the numbers they want to change. I told them if they break it, they could just re-download.
I don't know. Do you guys want to talk something else about map scripts or proceed to the next topic?
It's been a while since I've played Civ 5. I can't remember if there are any outstanding map script issues that people might run into.
Oh, there's a ton. Lately in the last couple patches, the default maps are starting to get really screwed up. The small continents map script does not create small continents anymore. It's actually creating large continents or Pangaeas. The continents map
they
script
change
will
the script?
I'm trying to look at it. It kind of looks like maybe somewhere in there they might have accidentally switched which script is getting called. So, like, and on continents maps, and even in Pangaea maps, a section of a continent could be removed from the map and put somewhere else, where it used to be just, you know, two solid land masses separated by water with maybe a few islands. Now you might get one solid landmass, one other landmass that has a hole in it, and a third one where that hole came from.
Sounds almost like this is happening or something.
Yeah, so it really does start to look like maybe somebody accidentally messed up which map scripts were getting called, or maybe they were trying to do some little detail change that blew up.
Actually, Cephaloid, I hadn't asked. Natural wonders and city-states, did you leave all those placements to just the default, how they were?
Yes, I did. That's all Syrian stuff.
Okay, and Perfect World 3.1, can you get rid of El Dorado and Fountain of Youth?
Hey, but that was Spain is useless.
El Dorado is one of the new ones.
Yeah, no Skill Dorado.
Is El Dorado one of the new ones that they've added in patches?
Yep.
I don't remember that one. I haven't played in a while. I'm kind of boycotting the DLC thing with Civ because I don't agree with downloadable content. But
me neither, but I'm forced to.
Just think of it as an expansion that you paid for over time.
Right, 10 times as much.
Yeah.
Well, no, not quite, really.
Well, you know, the problem I have, here's, I can say in a few sentences what my problem with it is. Remember what we learned in Civ 4, the most important lesson, is that, a designer reaches perfection not when there is nothing left to add, but when there's nothing left to take away. So when you chop your game up for downloadable content, you are either cutting stuff that's necessary, or you're adding stuff that's not necessary. So if you think of games as like an artistic endeavor, you can't increase the quality of your work by cutting it up this way. Like, making games is very hard. Like, making games that people like is something that a person has to, you know, go full out on. You can't really tie one hand behind your back and expect people to, you know, be really excited about it. I think that the whole DLC thing in Civ 5, I think it created some anger in a lot of people, and it doesn't increase the quality of the work. And I don't know if it increases the bottom line. I would say that most games are successful because they're great games more than their marketing scheme is that they use.
That'll depend on the publisher. 2K is more of the type to do the chop something out of a game. Because you can see that across all of the games that they put out in the last year or two, where they're chopping out core sections of a game. Now, with Civ 5, though, I disagree with people that a scenario and a civilization is core to the game, because it's not. A civilization is completely independent of the rest of the game. And same for scenarios. It has nothing to do with the core game. You have to look at what it is
and decide if it's worth that much money.
Oh, yeah, pretty much. If you want to play, say, as Spain or Inca, you have to decide whether or not the $7-$8, whatever it is at this point, is worth paying for to play as those two civs. It doesn't take away from the game to not have them there, and then you can almost say it doesn't really add much either, but...
It just depends on
your perspective. I think the one that people started getting cranky about the DLC model is with the New Wonder Pack, because it does show up into the core game for the New Wonders and stuff like that.
Right.
Well, yeah, how would that work in multiplayer?
It's just like any other mod or DLC. It has to be selected, and everybody has to have it to be able to play in multiplayer.
But people who have it can unselect it so they can play with people who don't have it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Multiplayer, multiplayer is completely independent. So, like, and unlike in single player, where you're sharing maps, like if you share a map with somebody and you had DLC but they didn't, in single player they wouldn't be able to load the map because they didn't have the DLC. For multiplayer, it's all based around no DLC, and then you have to turn on specific DLC for to work. But to turn it on, everybody has to have it.
Mm-hmm. See, it's all very complicated. I kind of wonder if Civ would be a better fit to just go through the old, okay, you know, the expansions every couple of years or whatever. Because, I mean, that's, like for modders, it's like obviously, I guess you probably can't use that DLC in your mods if you want people to play it if you don't have the mod. I mean, it's just, I think it's a mess.
Well, I think the way it's set up, if you make a mod that, say, adds a Civ, it's not, as long as they turn your mod on, it's fine. I don't think you have to worry about the DLC, because as far as I can remember, the DLCs all count as mods, as far as the system's concerned.
Mm-hmm. But you can't take, like, the, you know, the Hawaiian ship or whatever from the DLC and use it in your mod.
Oh, no, you shouldn't be doing that.
No.
Some people do, so they just use the slinger texture for one of their own units, and as a consequence, many people can't use their new custom Civ.
Personally, I find that you shouldn't be able to do that. And I'm perfectly fine with a mod who, if a modder takes from DLC and tries to put it into a mod and then puts it out, to me that's very, I'm very skeptical about their morals.
I feel like if I was the one making Civ 5 and I wanted it to be this modability to be something, you know, that was really good about it, I think I would want people to use everything in the game to, like, you know, to do what they want and have fun with the game. I don't think that does that really help for access?
Well, with Civ 5, you can set dependencies in your mods. If I remember right, they still don't actually work. But once then if you use something from DLC, then you would set up your dependency to need the DLC. And that way, only people who have bought that from Firaxis will be able to play your mod. You can still use their stuff in your mod because no one's getting access to it without paying for it. But that's unless you do already, that dependency, then you shouldn't be using anything that came from DLC.
That's already the case now. In the example I gave, the modder referred to a texture which was only available in the DLC. So in that way, he already ensured that you had to have the DLC. Yeah. I think without DLC, you probably would just get a pink texture in a Civ 4 style. I don't know. Haven't tried it.
No, your point's correct. I mean, if they want to make it fully moddable, everything should be available for the modding. And yes, that is the correct vision. The difference is, think about, you know, let's go back to Civ 4. If you only have vanilla and somebody went and made a mod for BTS, should you be able to use that mod in Civ 4 vanilla? Because it's using everything from BTS, and you haven't paid for the expansion?
Well, I guess in that case, it was just impossible, just because the code was so different in the expansion.
But it's the same mental thought line, just that the DLCs are much smaller and more independent of the rest of the game in that respect.
I think when, as a modder, though, I think the thing that you want the most is a large audience. It seems like this kind of makes them up. I don't know.
Oh, no, I know. It provides a problem, especially for mods. And even for the Hall of Fame and the Game of the Week for Civ Fanatics, they actually, all of their games are without DLC because they don't want to deal with the fact that there's DLC out there and they don't want to deal with only five people can play the game versus, you know, everybody. And it's the same headache that modders will have. And that probably it is a problem in that respect, but that's where most modders will have to just focus on vanilla. It's a frustration that a lot of people have had with the change.
I wonder if they're really benefiting themselves as a company doing this versus the old way.
Money-wise, 2K seems to have its hat in the ring of splice everything up. Is it the best way to keep a community for this type of game? Probably not.
Now, doesn't the money depend on the community? I mean, and the health of the community?
There's still a very small minority beyond a Civ native, so, and when you play Civ. So I don't think, I don't know. Yeah. I don't think that's a real issue.
The main complication I see with it, I mean, is kind of like just the official big name companies jumping in on the modding community, and oh, they also get a charge for their work, which with how complicated leaderheads are now, it's kind of nice that they're coming out and putting out the new ones. But on the other hand, yeah, where you were talking about, it would be nicer just to see it all as an expansion. You got to assume that there will be expansions eventually. And right. If there are, it's going to be so much harder for them to come up with new civs because they've got only one leader per civ. And not only are they putting out new civs, like, on a semi-regular basis, but they've got the basic ones. And you're just going to run out of worthy civs.
It's going to dampen the enthusiasm for the expansion.
Yeah, and definitely if the expansion is just a collection of the DLC sold up to that date, that'll just piss everybody off.
Yes, it will.
I think they'll probably do new features like religion and espionage.
Oh, I don't think either of those will come back, especially religion. That was fairly clearly, depending on how you wanted to read it, something that wasn't going to come back to the Civ series just because of the annoyance and complications therein. Outside of the game, not inside.
Outside the game?
Well, as soon as you start talking religion, you start cheesing off stupid groups who then start whining. There's always some idiot somewhere who wants to complain about something completely trivial and make it a big thing.
They said that before Civ 4, but as far as I know, it didn't prove to be a problem.
Yeah, times change. Well, when Civ 4 came out, that was before various events happened in the last...
And look at how bland the revisions are in Civ 4. That was half the reason that they were just useless.
Yeah.
If you're going to have a mechanic in there, it's nice that it has multiple options. It's nice to have the options matter more than just, hey, this controls all diplomacy ever.
Yeah. One of the things you could see as an expansion, and that might actually be something worthwhile, is, you know, an expansion that allows multiple leaders per Civ with the new expansions. That would be like a work that would be an expansion to the game. I would see new features and other such things, but at least, you know, the underpinning of a new expansion might be a new set of mechanics and features and stuff like that could relate to that sort of thing. And maybe even allow modders at that point to create their own, you know, multiple leaders for the types of civs that are out there. But that would require some thought. And I'm not entirely sure how well thought out.
I like expansions for, like, it's nice to be able to, like, you know, come back to a game 2 years later or whatever and try to apply all the lessons you've learned and try to, like, enhance it in a way where you're using, like, the previous feedback for, you know, something new. I'm totally for expansions, but the DLC, all I know is that I think I was done with Civ 5 a lot earlier than with previous installments. Yeah. And I can't imagine. I don't know.
Well, I think because this exact topic was talked about on the recorded cast yesterday, or the previous polycast, or the one that was recorded yesterday, and it'd be more akin to, I think, as Dan went and put it, more akin to saying to use horses you would have to pay as DLC. That would be an affront to the game. and to the community to use horse units. That would be very, very much an affront.
But we didn't even get Genghis Khan.
So I guess it really depends. Or if, say, there was a DLC that expanded the tech tree to be, you know, at least as long as Civ 4's tech tree.
Right.
That would be more of an affront to the community on the DLC model.
I feel like they held Genghis Khan hostage at the beginning. I mean, it was a free DLC, but...
that was just to get people used to the idea of downloading stuff, I think.
Well, there was also a lot of people who were pissed off. and it came free kind of more because of that than anything. Not to mention, it was Mongolia files were found in the release version.
So yeah, see, I mean...
You already kind of knew it was there.
Oh.
So if they had tried to make people pay for it, you know. I had that argument with 2K Greg right at the beginning.
I do have a confession to make.
Okay.
I bought Mass Effect 1 a while ago on Steam, and as a consequence, I did not get to... Yes. I'm afraid I haven't played the 1066 scenario. I did watch your review on YouTube, but that's about it, I'm afraid.
Yeah, it was fairly quick. It wasn't a full playthrough, so at least I think on the YouTube one, I at least showed the starting positions and stuff like that, right?
Yeah. Yes, indeed. So basically, imagine you're the only one who's played this thing ever. So
they build out full leaders. The Normans are a full civ. It's complete with their own colors, their own leader. It's not a reused leader at all. They've got a version of a knight. They've got their own tile improvement.
Mott and Bailey?
Yeah, they've got the Mott and Bailey for the tile improvement, the Norman knight as a knight replacement. It's not much of a knight replacement, but they've got their own standard, their own leader. It is a 2D leader, so it's just paint, but at least it was done that way versus previous
the Polynesian scenarios where, for instance.
Yeah, where they just took the other leaders. And same for, yeah, and
something.
Same for the English. It's all done that way as well, where they've got the unique unit of the Hurskell and stuff like that. Now, granted, the Norway and Denmark are the exact same civ, just with different pictures. But,
okay, I do have a question to ask. I think it's an interesting one, despite not having played the scenario. They turned off all kinds of systems, you know, happiness, culture, whatever there is. But so that basically turns the scenario into a pure combat game. Do you feel Civ 5 is still worth playing then? I don't know. I always felt that what was good about Civ 5 is a combination of combat and economics. But if you leave one of them out, a pure economics game or a pure combat game, that Civ really isn't that interesting at all. For instance, yeah, okay, go ahead.
Well, it depends on what you're trying to model. I mean, yeah, science is off, happiness is off, golden ages and policies are all off. You do have the, you know, gold economic side of things. You can still end up going broke. But it really, I mean, for this one, it really is a war scenario. They wanted to model a particular war. Is it as in-depth as, say, Rome Total War or some scenarios from that? Definitely not. Because that's its bread and butter, versus Civ, which is supposed to be this hybrid. And it's more strategic. So it's a little weird that way. But as a scenario, it can make sense. How they did it, they probably should have done it on slightly to slow it down a little bit.
I think it'd be very useful for modding to be able to do that. I have a question about this. Do they, when you turn off all these systems, is that something that's easy to do, or did they actually modify the game core to make that sort of thing allowable?
When this came out, there was a very long list of new things that modders can get access to in the patch. So you don't need to buy the Denmark DLC to get access to that. It was part of the actual patch that came with it.
Because I could think of all kinds of scenarios that people might want to kind of model, you know, like you know, some sort of invasion of Normandy or all kinds of, like, battle scenarios that...
Well, my advice would be don't do them. I mean, just if you had a choice, what would you rather play, this scenario or, for instance, Battle for Wesnot, if you are familiar with that?
Yeah. Well, it depends. I mean, I think that... I guess if we had access to the game core, there's a lot of fun stuff we could do, but I kind of wonder if it might be fun to be able to turn off all those systems and either, well, I guess if you can't replace them, maybe it's less value, but I was just wondering if that was possible to just replace, you know, to turn off happiness and all that stuff.
Yeah, you can definitely turn off happiness. Can you add a different system in to replace it? Maybe. It depends on what you... It actually probably could happen. I mean, there's already stuff that for the different mods that interact in the UI and in the game. Maybe right now, probably not. Maybe once the DLL is out, you can start adding mechanics and then just turn off happiness and maybe turn on health if that's where you want to go with it.
Civilization Knights has a system where each military unit costs happiness and each citizen provides happiness.
Yep.
That could be, yeah, that's interesting, kind of.
Yeah, so you can adjust mechanics, and as long as you tie things back in, then you're okay. The core issue to that, though, turns into, can the AI understand your new mechanic?
Mm. Yeah.
The AI is built to, say, understand, you know, a bit of the tech tree. Probably not as well as it should. And it doesn't react as well as it should, but at least it kind of understands the tech tree. You wipe out, say you create a mod that instead of this flat 2D version that's very old and very core to the series as a style, but replace it with something far more, you know, realistic or effective, the AI may have no clue what it's doing there. So you'd have to go in and modify how it thinks about it and what it's going to do about it. And definitely without the access to the DLL, that's not going to happen. Though I have this funny feeling the DLL is going to be out in the next month or two.
Yeah, didn't they say that 2 months ago?
Yeah, but they've been very, very quiet.
Fusion power in 10 years.
Well, if I remember right, someone said the timing on Civ 4 was about a year and a half. So we should be looking at sometime around now for when we expected it anyway.
Yeah, in the spring maybe, but they've been very, very quiet lately. Too much time has gone by that they haven't even talked about a DLC.
Yeah.
Now, granted, they may be using that time just for the, you know, oh, look, the Game of the Year version is out. Haha, that bought us a year, or bought us a couple months. Except that most people wouldn't buy the Game of the Year version because they already had the game. But, you know, that's a different story. But I think the core to think about for the Denmark scenario is more about, and again, this is kind of what we talked about last time, looking at the different scenarios to find out what they did to help you build your own scenarios. And in this one, all of the 2D leader heads, and everything else, because they added everything, including when you kill people off, that's all there. So all, you know, how to incorporate new art, new backgrounds, new leader, self-contained new Civ. Now, granted, a lot of people have figured out a lot of that themselves, but this one may be just, if you're looking for an example of how it integrates, effectively, then this might be a good one to, take a look at for the scripts. Because all the DLCs, you can see all the Lua, you can see all the Python, or sorry, all the XML and everything else. You get access to all of that because it is effectively a mod that you just paid for.
When we were discussing last episode, what scenario to cover this episode, you said 1066 would be a good tie-in with map scripting. But I don't know.
Oh.
1066 is a fixed map, so what did you mean with that?
Oh, I think it's a fixed map, but I think it's more on the, if you're trying to figure out how to do scenario type maps, then even just like how it looks is pretty, it looks pretty good in comparison to some of the other maps, how things flow and everything else. So I think it's more of a, if you want to find out how to do certain types of maps, I guess, this would be fairly effective as a script. Although it may not be fully scripted, so.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't know, we're already at 75 minutes. How do you feel about...
Yeah, I'd say it's a good wrap-up point.
Yeah.
Okay.
So is there... What do we have to do to wrap up?
I just have to press the stop button, but...
Did you say goodbye?
There's a little outro.
Yeah, after we all say goodbye.
A final celebration.
Thanks for showing up. It was very nice talking to you. Did you have much fun, Cephalo?
Yes, it was a lot of fun. Thank you.
How about you, Majin? Did we spend enough time with you?
Oh, definitely. Thanks for having me back, and I guess I'll be around once in a while. But no, definitely, it was a good time.
And let's not forget Jacob, our regular host.
Yep.
Say blast. Yep. And as last, me. See you next time, guys.
All right. Time for wrap.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLY. In Europe, 44121-288-7659. That's 44121-288-POLY. You can Skype us at thePolycast or email us at thepolycast@gmail.com. For more information on Modcast, our sibling shows, Polycast, Revcast, and Turncast, or about Polycast in general, log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net. Civilization IV, Warlords Beyond the Sword, sound clips are copyright Take-Two Interactive.